Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across time and space, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on the 18th of July, 2013. And this is Nav Briefing 75, under the title, Freedom and the Void. So I'm recording here at 6 in the morning, a follow-up to MB 74, which may famously become known as the NB that got out of hand. I guess I'm right on course. I just didn't control the content or direction of that briefing simply because I couldn't. Well, I didn't want to. And that's more or less true of this one as well, although you'll probably find a little more structure here as I wanted to pull together some of the things that I didn't get to say about Tantra Mother, a.k.a. Vajrayogini, in the preceding talk. Now, I mentioned a book by the Buddhist scholar Elizabeth English entitled Vajrayogini. Now, I don't recommend that any of you read that book because it is absolutely loaded like fudge in a comb. Imagine if you had a comb in your bathroom, a comb that you want to comb your hair with, you know, and that it was just fudge was stuck on the comb. And that's what it's like reading some of these Buddhist discourses. You're trying to get through your mind with a comb that's covered in fudge. And besides, it's not necessary because many of you know the beautiful book Buddhist Goddesses of India by Miranda Shaw, and her chapter on Vajrayogini will certainly suffice. And what I'm going to do right now is read a little bit from that book. Each Buddha manifests enlightenment in a unique way, revealing different aspects of the supreme state. Vajrayogini demonstrates that enlightenment is not a passionless condition, but rather a state of wholeness in which one has access to all the energies and capacities of one's being. With her vibrant crimson body, streaming hair, and irrepressible dynamism, Vajrayogini manifests a state of total awareness in which the passions are fully operative, and freely flowing. Her passionate nature affirms that the tantric path is ideally suited for passionate people, providing powerful meditative tools for the transformation of primal egoic drives, eager, greed, selfish lust, into their enlightened counterparts. It is commonly said of Vajrayogini that, quote, her essence is great passion, end quote. Great passion, maharaga, denotes a rarefied transcendent passion or divine passion, free from self-referentiality and selfish or harmful expression. Having transcended selfishness and illusion, she can tap her passion in its sacred purity and direct it to the liberation of others. Trogyam Trungpa clarifies that what he terms her cosmic lust and passion has a compassionate dimension, for, quote, freed from grasping, it becomes a force of expansion and communication, end quote. It, quote, simultaneously nurtures the welfare of beings and blazes to destroy the neurotic tendencies of ego, end quote. Trungpa's analysis shows that the intensity of passion embodied by Vajrayogini is prized in the tantric setting. In keeping with her wholeness of being, Vajrayogini has every emotional modality at her command and can employ them at will. Most deities have one predominant facial expression or multiple faces displaying their repertoire of guises, But Vajrayogini's countenance registers a complex range of emotions. Her facial expression may be described as blissful, erotically enraptured, or intensely wrathful in varying hierophanies. Or she may exhibit a blend of moods, as described in a liturgy stating that, quote, she is imbued with a mixture of wrath and passion, in the fullness of bliss, laughing and baring her fangs, end quote. Artistic representations vary accordingly, ranging from tense contortions of anger to supernal alertness to the more tranquil mood of exaltation. Even in a beatific mode, however, she is generally shown with sharp incisors, alluding to her ferocity and the omnivorous quality of the tantric path, which requires that one confront and transform, digest, as it were, every experience that arises in the journey to enlightenment. So that's three paragraphs from page 360 and 361 of Miranda Shaw's magnificent book. And remember also the signature phrase for Vajrayogini: her dance is total freedom. Now, there are about half a dozen key points in that quotation that I'd like to return to at moments in the near future. These key points in the profile of Vajrayogini correspond closely to the points of a seminar I gave in Santa Fe some years ago. I guess it would be 84 or something like that, called Ruthless Caring. Now, I don't have the notes from that in front of me right now. I have to scoop them up from my files at Amergane House. But as soon as I do, return to that and have occasion to correlate that with these quotations, these three paragraphs. And also in doing so, I would be able to provide an explanation of why the call signal for Tantra Mother is 651. So, obviously, the DI on this Dakini shift is massive. And it's really, I have to say, unlike anything else I've ever seen so far in the GNE. And I know that those of you who follow the GNE have varying degrees of comprehension of certain elements in the practice, in the experiment. Some of you, I know, struggle with the astronomy. When I proposed the GNE, I didn't require that anyone follow the Dakini shifts. You may recall that. So in setting out the GNE, I said that we would observe the two moments during the month when the moon was closest to the earth and most distant from the earth, the so-called perigee and apogee surges, respectively, and other factors of astronomy. And as the GNE has unfolded, I have tended to include commentaries about the Dakini shifts in these briefings, of course, and more so as time goes by. I think with the Vajrayogini shift of July 2013, the GNE enters a new stage now. And that is that we've been moving toward this for some time. I think some of you will recognize that I've suggested that already. But we're in the stage now where the Dakini intel that is characteristic of each of these shifts becomes critically important and centrally operative in our participation in correction. So following the Dakini intel, by the way, comes from the Aeon Sophia. Let me make that clear, unless you haven't got it by now. These various dakinis who come on shift in coordination with the lunar cycles. Mirita, Kematsu, who is a merge of the wrathful green Tara and Bhudevi. Idris, Vajrayogini, Bhairavi, Shodashi, and so forth. These dakini frequencies are all frequencies of the mind of the Aeon Sophia. Her mind is so vast that it needs to step itself down into these discrete frequencies in order to load into your mind what it offers you. When you stand in the presence of her mind in its entirety, or at least to the extent that a human witness can do so, in a state of cognitive ecstasy, in a telestic seance, when you stand in the presence of the organic light and in the mind of the Aeon Sophia in its entirety, the only response that you can have is to shut up. That is why the word mystery comes from a root muain, meaning to put your finger to your lips or to mute yourself, because the silent knowing in the presence of her total mind is so immense. Out of her compassion for humanity and out of her wish to reach us, she breaks down her mind into these 16 transmitting frequencies. And each one of them is highly specific. Hence, each one of the dakinis on shift in each particular month teaches very specific things, and you identify the dakini by the frequency, not only by her frequency, but by the teaching that she delivers. So when I say DI or dakini instruction from Tantra Mother or Miss Piggy, what I mean is a discrete subliminal frequency from the mind of the Aeon Sophia herself. And I submit to you that as of the changeover of this last shift, the entire situation of Dakini shifts has itself been shifted. And I saw in the first, I won't exaggerate, 4 minutes. In the first 4 minutes after the new moon of Monday, July 8th, as I was sitting up in the grenier in the light of the morning coming through the little rectangular window looking out on the farmlands of Flanders, as I sat there that morning, in 4 minutes, I saw the entire change and what it implies, and much, much, much more. I have never in my life experienced such a massive and immediate download of Dakini instruction as at that moment, as I was waiting for the coast-to-coast phone call. Now, something I have to get off my mind. You're warned now. Whenever I say this, I'll probably go on a 3-hour digression. But no, there is something I have to get off my mind, that I have to tell you what happened to me at that moment, among the several things that happened. There's just one thing I have to tell you about. So bear with me, because I want to get this out of the way so that I can go into the core material of this briefing. Well, I just have to tell you this because it was such a thrill when it happened. You know, the first minutes of the Vajra Yogini shift happened, of course, at the close of the shift of Idris. And you might recall that I said something about Idris playing cards, remember? I'm not going to reiterate all that now, but I explained how Idris deals to you when you're sitting at her table, how she deals these cards. And one of the things I said was that the first thing that Idris does Well, first of all, she plays with a deck of 10 cards. These represent the 10 emanations of time through Kali. And the first emanation of time is Kali herself. And so that is number 10 in the deck of Idris. One is 10. And so she takes the 10 card off her deck, remember I said, and she puts it aside. So she only plays with 9 cards. She teaches you the fractal internesting of the dimensions of time in the non-linear beauty and bounty of eternity by using 9 cards and by playing her card game with you. That's how she initiates you. She's a high, high initiate into the mysteries of time. But the first thing she does is takes off this one card from her deck of 10 so that she's only dealing with 9 cards. Now, what I saw at this last moment of her shift was what happens when she passes over the 10 card to Marita. Now, remember that Marita and Idris are sitting at 2 tables in Kali's casino, and they're dealing games that initiate you into the mysteries of time. But as we saw in the Marita shift of this spring, Marita is concerned with linear and seasonal time and with our involvement in linear time, whereas Idris is concerned with going beyond linear time into fractality and simultaneity of different dimensions of time. And yet the two dealers are, you know, they're complicit with each other. So why then would Idris give her 10 card to Marita? Well, let's just take a look for a minute at what's happening over at Marita's table. She's sitting there and she's dealing a game with 20 cards. There are 20 cards in Marita's deck. But the composition of these 20 cards is peculiar. At the moment that Marita prepares to deal, she only has 18 cards. And so then she reaches over and she gets the 10 card from Idris. And that gives her 19 cards. But because she is able to take a card from another deck, did you get this? Because she is able to take a card, namely the 10 card of Idris, from another deck, from another game, dealing with initiation into the mysteries of time, she can add a special card to her deck. So the total of Marita's deck is 18 cards plus the 10 of Idris and another card that Marita adds to her deck, which is called Marita's Joker. Now, you know what the Joker in a deck is? In some games, a Joker can trump any other card. And this is true. The fact that, get this, I mean, this is too beautiful to be true. This is truly transcendent. I mean, this is Kalika Tantra in the gaming metaphor by which you can master every act and every state of consciousness. Because Idris supplies Marita with a 10 card, Marita can add a joker to her deck, giving her a sum total of 20 cards. And what what I saw as the last second instruction of Idris, it was like she said, look over there. Look over there, quick. Oh, Marita is adding her joker. Do you see what it is? And I looked and I saw what it was. The joker is that simultaneity is not restricted to linear time, but it can coincide with it. That is Marita's choker. Now, consider what you normally think of when you hear the word simultaneity. Okay, here it is, 6:20 a.m. in the morning, where I am. And what is the simultaneous moment? Well, whatever it is where you are, it's the same moment. It's a different clock time, but it's the same moment, you know. So if you're 6 time zones to the west of me, then it's now 12:20 a.m. in the morning, say on the east coast of the United States, and you might be there getting up and having a cup of tea simultaneously with me standing here during this recording at 6:20 a.m. in Madrid time. So you think, and I think, and we're all taught to think, that simultaneity happens in linear time. But according to Marita's joker, simultaneity actually happens outside of linear time, although it may coincide with linear moments. Now, sitting there in the Grenier on that Monday morning, I was looking at local time. So it came to 8:15 or 8:17 a.m., the exact moment of the new moon. And of course, in London, at Universal Time, it was 1 hour earlier because the astronomical clock, the astronomical ephemeris, records the new moon for Universal Time. So it so happened that Universal Time of 7:15 a.m. corresponded to 8:15 a.m. where I was. It was the same moment, and the new moon occurred exactly at that moment. So this massive download in the first 4 minutes was simultaneous with the actual event of the new moon, right? No, wrong. Brussels time, which is normally 1 hour later than London time, would have been 1 hour later than Universal time, except for a most annoying chronological quirk called British summer time. And so, in fact, the London clocks were also set 1 hour ahead. So while I was expecting the exact moment of the new moon to be 8:15 my time, it was actually 9:15. So the result is that I received the download, which I associated with the exact moment of the new moon, 1 hour before that moment occurred. Nevertheless, the download was simultaneous with the new moon. Why? Because according to Marita's joker, simultaneity does not have to occur in linear time, although it can. And I was not only shown that law, if you will, that anomalous law, but it was demonstrated to me. So don't be worried so much about the exact simultaneous timing that we may be inclined to observe at certain moments in the GNE, because simultaneity can occur outside of the linear framework of time. And that is exactly what occurred to me on that Monday morning. I got the download 1 hour before the new moon, but it was exactly as if the download were simultaneous with the moment of the new moon. And this is called temporal juxtaposition, which is a version of simultaneity outside linear time. And there's a whole story that goes along with temporal juxtaposition, which I can't go into right now, but it concerns a certain Russian poet and shaman named Velimir Khlebnikov, who discovered this phenomena of the non-linear simultaneity of different moments of time. So that was a real thrill. I was dazzled by this, the way this happened. And then I sat there, and while I was more or less preparing myself to do this stupid interview on Coast to Coast, I was in full-blown download from the first moments of the Vajrayogini shift. Now, before I return to the subject of freedom, the Bodhisattva teaching on freedom, if you will, why not? Okay. Let me say a couple of things about the DI in those first 4 minutes. I got the call sign. When I got the call sign, I saw what the call sign indicates. Of course, VJY simply indicates her initials, Vajrayogini, VJY. What then about 651? That part of the call sign is not arbitrary. Those three numbers, repeated subvocally along with the mudra I described, will put you on her frequency. It works that way because the total call sign of six parts, three letters and three numbers, has the ability to gear your NLP, to her frequency. Okay. That is to say, subliminal frequency. But there's also information encoded in the three numbers. The three numbers of this call sign, VJY651, indicate the special teachings of Vajrayogini. She has one special teaching, that is, release from pretending. I've written a lot about that on Planetary Tantra. Did you know that it was during the Vajrayogini shift that I first realized this teaching in the existential conditions of that moment, release from pretending? And it was Vajrayogini's instruction on release from pretending that allowed me, through much turbulence and turmoil on the emotional level, I must say, but it allowed me to liberate myself from the situation with Emma. So that is the one supreme teaching of Tantra Mother. She also confers an initiation. Now, this initiation, indicated by the number 5, is actually a Kalika initiation. And it is the only Kalika initiation that is available in Planetary Tantra without going through the portal into Kala Tantra. So, for all those who are in Planetary Tantra and who don't have the disposition to go into Kala Tantra, they can still receive one supreme teaching from the dimension of Kala Tantra, and that is the 5-skull-crown initiation of Vajrayogini, hence 5. She teaches the 5-skull-crown initiation. If you look at the Tibetan Dakinis, you'll see that they wear crowns, and the crowns are made of skulls. And at the center of the crown, above the forehead of the Dakini, is a large skull, and on either side are 2 smaller skulls on right and left. And that is the generic shape of what is called the 5-skull crown. What is the five-skull crown initiation? It is the unique teaching that comes from Tantra Mother regarding the transmutation of the five poisonous emotions or five negative emotions into precious elixirs of wisdom. And Vajrayogini alone confers this instruction. And as I said, she confers it on anyone who seeks it. And you don't have to have done the Kalika Tantra vow or practice tongue on knife or any of these other extremely daunting and rigorous practices of Kala Tantra in order to have this initiation. Okay, so much for the one. So much for the five. What about the six? Well, this was new to me. This was totally new to me. And yet it wasn't new to me at all. In that 4-minute download, I saw that I had received a kind of proto-terma from Vajrayogini back in the 80s in Santa Fe. And based on that terma, it's not a real terma because I worked it out and I elaborated it myself. A genuine terma or wisdom treasure comes spontaneously in the form of non-elaborated syntax. So this system, I have to call it that, this system that I cooked up in the 80s in Santa Fe, which was the basis of this seminar I gave called Ruthless Caring, was actually a representation, you could say, of the teaching of Vajrayogini indicated by six. Why is that? Because it's based on the Tibetan model of the six realms. And I will go into more detail on this in the specific talk on ruthless caring. Now, I can tell you right now, in case you're gritting your teeth about getting a slug of Tibetan terminology shoved down your throat, I intend to do nothing of the sort, and I don't need to do anything of the sort. Consequent to the realization I had at that moment that the entire Tibetan scheme, which I then converted into astrological correspondences, is now itself converted into a universal instruction coming from Mama Teach. And this universal instruction about our behavior as human animals, about our social behavior, it's a universal course of instruction about our social behavior that enables each individual who takes that instruction to know how to behave in all situations of correction and non-correction circumstances. So, Tantra Mother teaches her children, the magical children of the goddess, how to behave in her correction. And this teaching is now present on this planet, available on this planet. It is broadcasting on this planet since the 7th of July. Get that? It is broadcasting. She is broadcasting directly to everyone this teaching, which I drew from Tibetan sources and then converted into astrological metaphors, as I'll explain in the next briefing, so that you can use it yourself. Now, I want to emphasize that this teaching from Mama Teach has certain very, very special characteristics. And if I can give you the descriptive syntax for it, the chances are that you won't miss it. And needless to say, it has to be unmissable. Because this is the first direct instruction coming from the Aeon Sophia. You can consider that the Aeon Sophia herself is giving this instruction. But as I said at the beginning of this talk, the immensity of her intelligence is so great that she breaks it down into bands of frequencies so that you can receive it, so that it goes into a bandwidth that is small enough for the human mind to incorporate. So through the bandwidth of Vajrayogini, a.k.a. Miss Piggy, a.k.a. Mama Teach, the Aeon Sophia now teaches humanity how to behave in both correction and non-correction scenarios. Is that clear? That teaching is alive in this atmosphere. It is part of the atmospheric transformation that is occurring, and in particular, it is reflective of the deep compression and shrinking of the atmosphere, which has been the cause of alarm to some people. The atmosphere of the earth is compressing, and certain processes in the atmosphere of the earth, which would have occurred if coronal emissions were happening at the rate that one would expect due to the sun being at a solar maximum, then that compression would not be able to happen because of the heating up of the atmosphere due to the blast of these coronal emissions would destabilize the process. But there is a process underway, and it seems to be part of a dystropic or syntropic trend, read it as you will, that is causing the compression of the entire ionosphere and the troposphere and the layers below it. And I say to you that this physical event, this geophysical atmospheric event, is the medium for the Aeon Sophia to teach at the level of ordinary human consciousness. That's what I say. And so, I intend to be as impeccable as I can be in providing the descriptive syntax for this so that you can then detect what is already occurring in your own minds. And I highlight the particular extraordinary and unique features of this 6-point instruction as follows. Point one, as Dakini instruction in a 6-point format, that is, you'll see it has 12, 6, and 3. This instruction now flooding into the human mind through the subconscious of the human species and trickling up even into the conscious mind has the ability to dissipate instantaneously the deadlock of negative and death-ridden thinking connected with the 6-pointed Star of David. So this 6-point format instructional teaching of She Whose Dance is Freedom brings, first and foremost, freedom from the oppression of that symbol, that other 6-pointed symbol of the 2 interlacing triangles. Now in itself, the Star of David and the 6-pointed symbol of interlacing triangles does not belong to any particular group of people on this planet. It is, like the pentagram and like other symbolic structures, like the swastika, a factor in the collective psyche of humanity. The swastika and the five-pointed star, often associated with Satanism, wrongly associated with Satanism, do not belong to Satanists or Masons or people in the Aleister Crowley cult. These symbols, these geometrical and metaphorical devices, belong to the human mind. They belong to humanity at large. But it is a fact that due to certain conditioning factors in this experiment, certain human beings have seized upon these components of the collective psyche and used them for destructive purposes. And that is particularly true, more than any other symbol of the six-pointed star known as the Star of Solomon or Seal of Solomon. So the instruction now flowing through the channel of Tantra Mother has the capacity to dissipate, dissolve, and completely dismantle the power that has been invested in that universal symbol, releasing the universal symbol back to neutrality and freeing it for other uses, such as gardening. All right, point number two. The DI of Vajrayogini in the six-point format goes into the ordinary tonal and applies to the tonal thinking. Remember, the tonal is the realm of the ordinary, or what you can conventionally call the mundane. The mundane, and it is also the realm of habit. So since most people live in the mundane and not in the nahual, which is the extra mundane, the other world, or the unknown, the extraordinary, the supernatural, you can call it by many names. Since most people live and behave according to the predictable social responses of the tonal, this teaching reaches people at the level where they live. And so, here is an anticipation. You can anticipate that Vajrayogini's instruction on the behavior that suits her correction will arrive or register in random hits in all kinds of people all over the place. Certainly, it will register more coherently and consistently in those who have the syntax of the teaching, which is, as it were, a kind of fielding or receptive tool. But even for those who don't know anything at all about this six-point format, the instruction is accessible. The unique feature of this instruction now, at this moment, following the coordination of her first and second attention, is that she achieves access to the ordinary mind. So this is both a subliminal access and ordinary access instruction. She, the Aeon Sophia, effectuates it directly into the mind of human animals, transmitting to the mind of the herd. She is transmitting now to the mind of the entire herd. And one of the first evidences to see of that is the complete disintegration of the Zionist agenda, because the Zionist agenda is focused in that symbolical structure of the two interlaced triangles making the Seal of Solomon. And that is, of course, the symbol on the Israeli flag. Number three. Simultaneous with this download in the first 4 minutes, which was actually 1 hour off from the event of the new moon, but nevertheless was simultaneous with that event. Simultaneous with that was the funny little expression, mama teach, mama teach. Why mama teach? Well, it's like see spot run. Look, Jack, look, Jill, see spot run. Suppose that you went around all day talking like this. You might find yourself talking like this at moments. You know? See man lie, see spot run, you know? See girl cheat. See man cheat, you know? You might find yourself actually reduced to baby talk. Why? It's because in the way that the Aeon Sophia is broadcasting this instruction for the behavior that suits correction into the human mind, she reaches with her frequency into the synaptic channels of NLP that were formed when you came out of pre-verbal experience. For most of us, we came out of pre-verbal experience around the age of 3, 3.5, or 4, when you learned to talk and when you could say things like, mama, drink milk, you know, or Dougie, drink milk, you know. When you could speak in baby language, the rudiments of your NLP circuitry were laid down at that time at a deep, deep layer of the NLP circuitry, which subsequently is overgrown and overwritten by other layers. You got the picture? Bear in mind also that it was at that time that you were in the early stage of verbal experience that you were exposed to the concept of God. And so the concept of God and the notion that God is omniscient and omnipresent is registered in your NLP synaptic circuitry at the most fundamental level. And it is at that most fundamental level that it needs to be released. And so, mama teach. Mama teach freedom by reaching your NLP at that level where it was configured in the first moments of your post pre-verbal experience. In the first moments when you began to talk. That is where she reaches in order to free you into conscience. Because it is only by acting in conscience, which she cannot reach herself, that you can participate in her correction. And although she cannot reach conscience, and she cannot make anyone have conscience, and she cannot affect the conscience of the world, she, as Tantra Mother, can teach you to own conscience. And that is exactly what she's doing in this system of the conversion of the six worlds of the Tibetan Wheel of Life. As for item 4, aspect 4, which would be the extent on which I would care to comment in this briefing, I would say that item 4 would be the gift of clarity that comes with freedom and that comes with the freeing from social and behavioral conditioning through this instruction. One of the terrible disempowering aspects of life today is the terrible confusion about what has happened to people, what has happened to society, to governments, what has happened to the institutions upon which human beings depend for the continuance of society. And there is a tremendous amount of confusion in the human mind. The confusion goes along with the state of terror. And confusion and terror, as you know, are elements that invite and give advantage to the intrusion of the archons. So, in order for human animals to behave in a way that is consistent with Sophia's correction, when they are in a correction scenario and even when they are in a non-correction scenario or non-correction situation, it's necessary for there to be clarity that has not yet been attained, clarity that has not yet been realized. And while I'm not exactly so clear on this point yet regarding the distinct feature of Tantra Mother's instruction, I'd venture to put it in this way. At the center of the Tibetan Wheel of Life, there is a hub. The Tibetan Wheel of Life consists of an outer circle of 12 elements called the 12 links in the chain of reincarnation. There you are. So the theme of reincarnation comes into the study. Then within that circle of 12, there are the six realms, which are gods, titans, humans, animals, ghosts, and demons, to use the traditional terminology. And then at the core or hub of the wheel of rebirth are three figures: a rooster, a snake, and a pig. Now, if you go into a search engine and put in Tibetan Wheel of Life, you'll come up with many diagrams or many illustrations of this. So pull one up and then go to the zoom factor and look at what is at the core or hub of the wheel of rebirth, of karma and rebirth. The rooster or cock, the serpent or snake, and the pig are typically shown in an odd fashion, rather like a Ouroboros eating its own tail. They are each eating each other. So the tail of the snake is in the mouth of the pig, I think, and the head of the snake goes into the ass of the rooster. I don't know. It's a very interesting design. And this is a most famous detail of Tibetan iconography called the Dugsom, or three poisons. Now, it is said, according to the traditional teaching associated with this icon, that these three poisons drive the whole process of rebirth into the six realms and consequently then outward into the 12 links in the chain of interdependent origination, which produces rebirth. Got the picture? Now, these Dugsom, or three poisons, are variously named. And I think they're named greed, aggression, and ignorance, or something like that. There are various names for them. There's not one single set of terms. Now, you recall that I said that the number 5 in the call sign for Vajrayogini indicates the special teaching of the 5 skull crown initiation that she offers to the world at large, rather like Avalokiteshvara. Hey, can you say that? Avalokiteshvara, the Tibetan Buddhist god of compassion. Rather like Avalokiteshvara, who is said to present this teaching, by the way, the teaching associated with the icon of the Tibetan Wheel of Life. Rather like that entity, she teaches universally to humanity out of her compassion for humanity. So in that way, you could say there's an exact parallel between the Aeon Sophia and Avalokiteshvara in presenting this teaching, the ultimate liberation out of behavioral compulsion and repetition compulsion. However, the entire scheme and all the terms in the scheme are instantaneously transformed in planetary tantra. I've told you before how this happens and how It seems likely, although I can't say for certain, but it seems likely that I was gifted with the privilege to do this by a high Tibetan Lama of the Nyingma sect, okay? As far as I can tell, it was Dzogchen Rinpoche himself who conferred this privilege upon me, but I can't confirm that. I've tried, but I haven't been able to confirm that from the people who were there at the time. In any case, what I have is the ability to convert anything in the Tibetan Buddhist toolkit of practices into planetary tantra, anything, and to make it over into something better than it is in its received Tibetan form. So, this is what you see happening before your eyes with the teaching of the six realms. Or let's call it the six star teaching. And so if you are a star pupil in the classroom of Mama Teach, you get to wear a six star design upon your shirt, or you can stick it up on the refrigerator as proof that you are a prize student in her class. Now, as for the conversions in the six star teaching, they are totally lucid and brilliant and user-friendly. They are remarkably accessible. And just to complete this briefing, here's a preview of one of those conversions. Whereas in the Tibetan Wheel of Life, you find the snake, the cock, and the pig at the center of the mandala. And these are correlated to certain negative or poisonous emotions, such as greed or deceit or obtusity. In contrast to that, the three dynamic or seminal factors in the six star instruction are different. The clarity that every human person needs to see through the fog of war that we are engaged in comes from seeing that all reactive and negative behaviors on this planet derive from the same three experiences. And you know what they are, don't you? I think some of you will know. I think some of you will recall what I've said about my romantic breakdown in 2008. And I really need to clarify something about what I've said in that respect. I need to be really exact. The exactitude concerns the difference between planetary tantra, which is a general access form of interactive magic with Gaia, and Kala Tantra, which is a more intimate and esoteric, if you will, form of interactive magic with Gaia, with the Aeon Sophia. I said erroneously some years ago that everyone who comes into planetary tantra comes in from the traumatic experience of three things: loss, betrayal, and abandonment, or any combination of the three. That's not correct. You come into Kala Tantra in that way, but you come into planetary tantra through the beauty of her story. The beauty of her story is like the beauty of her presence in front of you. It's like the beauty of nature, of the rivers, the mountains, the clouds, the skies, the fields. The beauty of her story is like the beauty of nature. And that beauty is what draws every single person into Planetary Tantra. You do not come by an intellectual process. You do not come by choosing, although you can deselect yourself from certain spiritual programs and metaphysical programs that you may have been involved in, such as New Age spirituality or Buddhism. But basically, people come into Planetary Tantra because the beauty of it captures them. Then you go into Kala Tantra through the traumatic impact of loss, betrayal, and abandonment. Those are the counterparts to the Dogsum, or the three poisons at the center of the wheel of life. Now consider the subtlety here. Consider the beautiful harmony and complementation that now comes to be revealed. The harmony and complementation between Planetary Tantra and Kala Tantra comes through Mama Teach. Because Mama Teach, the five skull crown initiation, which is a high Kalika initiation to anyone, even if you are not in Kala Tantra. Remember? That's the five. But it gets even better. Because in the sixth format of the sixth star teaching, Mama Teach, the presence of those three traumatic elements in every situation in this world that is problematical and destructive. There is the clarification. There is the clarification of all human grief on this planet. Everything that is being done by the psychopaths, by the worst perpetrators at the executive and managerial levels, the banksters who are looting nations, the arms dealers, the people trafficking in human organs, trafficking in children and women, the horrible impresarios of the media who are deceiving and lying 724 to the entire world, all of this hideous, corrupted, deceitful behavior boils down to reactions from three primary vectors of pain. The pain of loss, which is displayed in the reaction of denial. The pain of betrayal, which is displayed in the reaction of lying. And the pain of abandonment, which is displayed in the reaction of pretending. And every single person who is doing harm to themselves and society, and who is harming the opportunities of the divine experiment on this planet, is doing so through one of those three reactions, or in a combination of the three. And when you can see that in every single personal instance, in every social instance, in every instance in the collective life, then you have the clarity of her instruction, and Mama Teach freedom in that clarity. Freedom from confusion. Freedom to own conscience. Freedom to know when conscience must be owned. So there are two precious gems of Kalika teaching inherent to the general access teaching of Vajrayogini beginning on the 7th and 8th of July 2013. And this is the biggest wave ever to crash across the bow of the mothership. I know you've all been wondering, as I have as well, what is going on? Why doesn't she intervene? Why doesn't she show people how to solve this mess. Why doesn't she show us the way out of this mess? Well, she is showing the way out of this mess. She can do it, but she could only do it immediately following the coordination of her first and second attentions. And as she shows the way, and as she teaches us to access that which she herself cannot access, that is to say, conscience, she puts us into the void, in the way we need to be in the void. Remember, the void, which is le néant in Sartre, is nothingness. It is the factor X. It is what is not there, except when you express it. It is only there when you express it. That strange dynamic is the mark of real freedom. Freedom and the void arise in the same moment. Freedom and nothingness are co-emergent, to use a technical term from Buddhism. And so, the factor X, which even the gods cannot provide, is only engaged when you, as an individual, acting in the social theater of behavior, take an existential stance, which means taking a risk. There is no freedom without risk. But on the other hand, there is no risk without freedom. It works both ways. And the beauty of her teaching of the six-pointed star and the five-skull crown initiation and release from pretending is that it all works together in one fantastic orchestration to bring the human animal to freedom. Because it's only in freedom that you can be fully human. And it's only in freedom that we can find and forge the solidarity which is the anthropos. There is no anthropos on this planet unless human animals can act in freedom. Without freedom, there is only a shadow world of zombies and phantoms inhabiting this planet. Decoys of humanity, like decoy ducks on a pond. I suppose over the coming weeks, as this teaching unfolds, I'll find myself talking now and again about freedom. It is, after all, a central theme of the Bodhisattva teaching of the 20th century that came to the world in the form of existentialism. But I think it would be appropriate to conclude this reading or this briefing with a remark about the corruption of our world. The corruption of our world has greatly troubled me, and I don't think I'm alone in that sentiment. A couple of months ago, in my exchange with one of the crew members, I put out this question in an email, you know. Well, why are the goyim so corruptible? You know, it's a fact, a documented fact, And there are even some individuals on the internet, such as Douglas Roscoff, who will attest to this verbally. They'll say it right in your face. The self-declared enemies of humanity who set themselves apart from all other human beings and consider themselves above humanity have declared their mission, or their agenda, if you will, to corrupt humanity. And this is called the corruption of the Goyim. And according to this agenda, which is writ large and clear in Talmudic writings and other traditional Jewish literature, anything's game when it comes to corrupting the Goyim. You can use any deceit on them you like. You can lie to them. You can make agreements with them and break them. And you can also rape their children. And you can sell them all into slavery. And you have to wonder, how could this horrific agenda, which, as I say, is a self-declared war against humanity, how could it have proceeded to the level where it is today? How could it have been so successful? After all, the people who follow this agenda are a minute population of the human race. So how could a minute fraction of the total population of animals living on this planet have been successful in carrying out the agenda of corruption? That's what I'll call it, the agenda of corruption. Or another way to ask the same thing is, how come the Goyim are so corruptible? And how come, the self-declared enemies of humanity can rely on the corruptibility of the Goyim in the way that they do? Well, I think in light of the former briefing and this one, the answer is screamingly clear. Maybe those self-declared enemies of humanity know something that we don't know. Maybe they know that human animals do not innately or intrinsically possess conscience. And without conscience, what is the force of resistance to their agenda? So, what I want to say in concluding this briefing is that the corruption that is now rampant in the social life of human animals is not just something that's getting in the way of everyone getting along and getting on to the designs and purposes of the planetary animal mother in making this experiment succeed. No, that corruption is not an obstacle. That corruption is the key to seeing what is human purpose in this divine experiment. What is human purpose? And also the key to seeing what is the human contribution to her correction. Just as evil is the mirror of good, this corruption, which is everywhere, is the occasion for responsibility in her correction. And so, what we may anticipate with an escalating effect now is the exposure of that corruption, but not merely that. Not merely that. Some people think that the exposure itself is enough. It's not nearly enough. With the exposure of that corruption comes the challenge to step into it and to stand up to it. And I have to ask you, how would you stand up to it in any way that it confronted you? Whether it be on the small scale of personal affairs, or in the social realm, or in the larger scale, how would you stand up to it? Well, if you are unwilling to take the risk to show conscience, then there's no way you can stand up to it. Conscience always involves risk. And that risk is the entry point to solution. The entry point to solution for the insanity and deceit and corruption on this planet. There truly is a void in the center of the human condition. And everything goes down into that void unless we, as human animals, bring freedom to it. Unless we go there to meet freedom in that void, then everything goes into that void. That is the way this experiment is designed from the get-go. But the teaching now coming from Tantra Mother provides all that is needed to face those conditions and master those conditions. And that is why it can be said that her dance is total freedom.